Welcome to Guerrillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast, teaching Davids how to defeat Goliaths. Now here's your host, Mark Anthony Peterson.
Welcome back to the podcast for entrepreneurs, startups, and business mavericks. If you're not a maverick, you don't have to go home, but you got to get up out of this podcast.
This podcast teaches entrepreneurs how to defeat the corporate giant. Just like in the story of David and Goliath, David defeated a much taller and stronger Goliath, not by fighting the giant in hand-to-hand combat, but by using technology. A slingshot. The slingshot allowed the smaller David to attack from a distance that minimized the advantages that Goliath had over the smaller David. My name is Mark Anthony Peterson. I am a serial entrepreneur, a futurist, and the managing executive at Serial Consulting, a leading small business strategy and technology consulting firm. I'm also the author of the book Guerrillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths, which is available on Amazon, iTunes, and Barnes & Noble. This podcast is brought to you by Serial Consulting. An idea can launch a business. A strategy
can take it global.
Guess what, guys? We are now
on Patreon.
That's right. You can support the show and help make this Guerrillapreneur movement a worldwide phenomenon. $1 per episode, I'll give your business a shout out and your name will be posted on the Guerrillapreneur Hall of Fame. If you donate $5 per episode, you'll get a signed copy of my book plus all the other benefits from level one.
For $15 an episode,
you will get a chance to co-host an episode with me. You get put in the mention section of my new book, Hit and Run, and you will get all the other benefits from the two previous levels. Now, what am I going to do with your support? First, I want to really put my pitch contest, the Sell My Business Pitch Contest, which is takes place in the Black Belt in the South.
I want to put the pitch contest on steroids.
For the last 4 years, we've hosted a Shark Tank style pitch contest,
trying to encourage the growth of technology and innovation in the Black Belt.
And we want to take that to the next level. I also want to increase the number and the quality of podcasts that we put out. So we're going to bring on a producer and bring on editors and really make this a global movement and use the podcast as the tip of the spear. And then finally, I would like to open
a maker space where tinkerers, engineers, artists, and just plain lunatics can get together and try to build technology that will change the economic landscape of the Black Belt.
I know it's a big vision, but it took one individual at Stanford to start a movement that created
Silicon Valley.
And I think we can do that in the Black Belt with your help. I also want to thank all the Guerrillapreneurs around the world for supporting this podcast. Many of you have sent me
tweets at Guerrillapreneur,
giving me your feedback on past shows and just saying, keep it up.
Thanks, guys. You don't know how much that means to me. Merry Christmas, Guerrillapreneurs. Christmas 2017. We're closing in on a new year, and that means new and bigger commitments. When I launched this podcast, I had no idea I would be reaching like-minded Guerrillapreneurs in over 20 countries. This podcast is for you, the entrepreneur that believes that he or she can do the impossible. Bring down the corporate giant. If no one else believes in you, I do. Keep fighting, Guerrillapreneurs. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Today's episode
is a Guerrillapreneur news episode.
News about the sharing, gig, and circular loop economies that we expect to grow to $335 billion by 2025. What are we going to talk about today? Bitcoin bringing power to Africa, facial image becoming the key to the gig economy, crowdfunding, and Airbnb booking. What does that mean? Wow, got some great stuff going on in the news today. But before we jump into those topics, let's jump in to the first thing in Guerrillapreneur news. WeWork. We've talked about those guys in the past. Well, guess what they're up to now? They're acquiring Meetup. Now, Meetup is the New York-based startup that has grown to 35 million members that help people organize activities based on their common interest. Just last week, I tried to set up a Guerrillapreneur meetup. Now, these guys have grown that business to 35 million members. Now, when you launch a meetup, you pay a monthly or annual fee to host a different, you know, levels of people to be involved in your meetup. I think it can be as little as $9 a month and can go up from there. So it's an interesting business model to basically act as an organizer of like-minded people who may share skill sets or at least common interest. Now, WeWork buying them really changes the dynamic. It adds a interesting twist to their strategy. As I've said in the past, what makes WeWork valuable is not the fact that they control a number of offices and offer co-location and co-work areas for people in the gig economy. It's the fact that they have an internal Facebook software that allows members to connect, socialize, and even do business together. Bolting on the Meetup software to the WeWork software multiplies the value of that business model, which means not only can they extend more value to the people who sign up to be WeWork customers, those individual gig workers or startups, they can now offer more value to corporations who want them to manage virtual workers that will eventually become the lifeblood of their business. According to Intuit, by 2025, over 50% of the U.S. workforce will be gig workers. So WeWork is positioning themselves to really be the HR manager as well as the staffing manager for the future economy. Wow.
Now let's put the WeWork strategy through the Gorillapreneur framework
and see if it really is a viable strategy. In chapter 2 of my book, where I talk about how to create slingshot technology, disruptive technology that helps you serve or price at the same level as the corporate giants, let's see if WeWork passes the test. The first question I ask is this strategy or this process or this technology disruptive? And you gotta say yes. WeWork is providing a networking capability that combines what they already have for internal networking with external networking with Meetup that helps them outflank the existing competitors, and it also displaces the staffing companies. How can a staffing company set up offices to support gig workers? Staffing companies are just basically trying to put temporary people inside the four walls of the company. Most companies are trying to get rid of those four walls and go to virtual workers. So WeWork is in the sweet spot. Does WeWork's strategy have broad market appeal? Absolutely. As I said, by 2025, over 50% of the U.S. workforce will be gig or contract workers, which means they're not permanent workers. They're moving from assignment to assignment, company to company, and they're going to need an office. They're going to need a way to network with people who have skills similar to their own, and they're going to need to be able to follow projects or companies when those companies need them to ramp back up again when new projects that require their skill set. Who's better positioned to manage that than WeWork? Can the giant implement what WeWork has done quickly? No. You pick a large company, you pick a staffing company, you pick any of these guys, and they cannot replicate what WeWork has already built. As I mentioned in the last episode, they're working right now with IBM
to manage IBM offices.
So their secret sauce allows them to come in and play the HR role, at least from a training operations perspective, for companies who already have workspace and that may one day want to turn that over to WeWork to either buy and own and staff employees who've been converted into gig workers. Interesting.
Can WeWork take this strategy global faster than the Goliaths can catch up?
Yeah, they have the software. They just need buildings to be able to staff people in places where companies need workers. And guess what there's a lot of right now?
Vacant buildings.
All over the country.
I can think of some companies.
They're giving them some prime locations where they can ramp up
their co-location strategy.
Macy's, Target, even Walmart's closing stores. So they have the pick of the litter when it comes to prime locations to execute this strategy.
Buzzing. That's the sound I make when a strategy is ready to go global.
So what are the next steps? If I were CEO of WeWork,
what would be my next move?
I'd be pressing the advantage. I'd be hiring HR specialists to help me integrate training and assessments capabilities into that internal software that you already have. You're seeing that happen already now. Microsoft announced last week that they aren't going to scour the world looking for experts in AI.
they're going to train the people they already have
and make them experts. Now, that's very smart. Even smarter is, what if they turn that over to WeWork and get a crop of virtual workers who already have the capabilities that they're looking for? So I'd press that advantage. I'd also bring on more developers to figure out how to make what I have in-house seamless with what the meetup guys have, so that I can drive my growth by encouraging those people who are building out these meetups to use my WeWork offices as their work location. I'd also find those people and drive them into some of my internal solutions, like the training that the companies are looking for, so that I have the best people and I can basically offer them soup to nuts when it comes to getting them opportunities. You think I'm
off base?
Just think of it in terms of Fiverr.
With a hoteling workspace type concept that offers you assessments to keep you up to speed on the latest skills and technologies needed by the largest companies in the world.
If WeWork can combine that with a physical office location for the workers, they have the secret sauce for the gig economy.
Ba-zing is the sound I make when a strategy comes together.
What's next in Gorillapreneur news? How about this? Airbnb, they just launched a new feature, and I love it. I love it. They launched a feature that allows for split payments. Split payments. Now, you've been seeing commercials for people who go out to dinner and they can use
their banking app
to do split payments. Airbnb just launched that in a test market to see if it can work in their business model. So essentially, two or three of a group that want to stay in a location can secure that property by putting down a partial payment. The remaining members of the group can make the rest of the payments prior to the actual booking date in order to secure the property and use it. I think that's cool. Why? Because now that you can have multiple people paying in prior to the booking date means that more people will choose the Airbnb option over other options when they're out vacationing and traveling with friends. Why is Airbnb doing it? Because according to them, almost 40% of the people who travel as a group have losses from people in the group not paying their share. 43% of them have lost as much as $1,000 from
those mooching friends who traveled with them on
a group trip. 18% have lost as much as $10,000 when going on a group trip. So for that high-end group of people who like to travel with their friends, with their colleagues,
but are too bashful to ask for their money back after the trip, now I'd ask for my money back.
This solves that problem. You're going to pay for it up front before the trip kicks off, and it's going to encourage more people to take these more expensive trips.
And if you don't go on the trip because one of your friends didn't pay, everybody's going to know who the mooch is now, so you don't invite them on the next trip.
I like it.
Now let's shift gears. Let me put on my futurist hat for a second.
Now, what could this possibly do? I keep postulating that the future of housing is going to go down the same path. Split payments for split ownership of a house. Individuals will say, I want to buy a bedroom and I want to buy access to the public spaces, which may mean the public bathrooms, the kitchen, and the living room. And all of that written up into a contract that you can turn around and resell to somebody else, to another gig worker.
Okay, stay with me now.
I believe Airbnb could dominate that kind of world where they can assist
gig workers buying and selling and even renting their shared home. In this brave new world where nobody has a full-time job, but everybody has multiple gig jobs, someone's going to have to step up and be the broker for transactions where people want to have some equity. Where Airbnb could use the blockchain technology, the distributed ledger infrastructure that powers Bitcoin, to manage the contracts where people buy the houses and then turn around and rent out individual rooms when they're not using them or when they're traveling as a gig worker. This is already being done by companies like Sun Exchange that are selling solar panels by the cell and then turning around and letting their investors lease those cells to schools and businesses, and they get micropayments back over 20 years. Airbnb can create this kind of market using blockchain, and then they can make fees off of the trades, off of the exchanges, and off of the sales of these properties. And blockchain would make it all possible for Airbnb to create this market and for individual gig investors to make money and to get equity at the same time. Wow, this is cool.
Now let's put the Airbnb
split payment strategy
through the Gorillapreneur framework. Is this feature disruptive? Yes. When was the last time you were able to book a room at Marriott using PayPal?
I still can't.
Can't do split payments. Can't do PayPal, online or offline, at many of the major chains. And if you can't do PayPal, you know split payments is going to take a long time to integrate into their workflow and into their systems. So this is completely disruptive. This is going to tip the balance with a certain class of travelers towards Airbnb. Does this have broad market appeal? Absolutely. I just told you that there are a significant number of travelers who are getting burned today
by mooches, and they're too shy to ask for their money back.
Solve that problem, and more people are going to be willing to travel in groups. Can they scale this up quickly?
Absolutely.
It's a central booking system. So what they're testing now, they can push into production and give access to everyone who wants to be able to manage split payments when booking their Airbnb travel. So I love it. I love it. Dynamic, disruptive, and it's going to change the balance when we start looking at what Airbnb is doing. Disruptive. Love it.
Buzzing is the sound I make when a strategy comes together.
What's next? What's third in Gorillapreneur news? There's a new car sharing service, one in Morocco. Wow, Morocco. Everybody's launching these car sharing services. And when we get to the Gorillapreneur framework, we're going to see if this is really disruptive.
The new service is called CarMine, and it launched in Casablanca.
And the CEO, Mohamed Marani Alawi, launched this service with a unique capability. The ability to manage safety. So what is he going to do? He has technology that essentially reports the performance of the car, its speed and other key performance indicators back to the platform and provides a
driver safety score.
Why is that important to him? Because in Morocco, the
driving environment is very chaotic.
And it is preventing the growth of his car sharing market. So by launching this technology, he can create a grading system and provide the best opportunities to
those with the highest safety score.
Unique, unique. I like that as a ability to create a niche market.
Now let's apply
the Gorillapreneur framework
and see
if that's the kind of thing that's going to be disruptive to Uber and Lyft. Is it disruptive? Yes and no. Yes, in the niche market. So everywhere you have chaotic drivers, and I've been a few places where I've been absolutely scared to drive, like the Philippines.
Sorry, guys. I love hanging out in the Philippines, but I almost caused a car wreck because I obeyed the street signs.
Mexico.
Do the stop signs really mean stop there? Or do they mean come to a slow roll and play chicken with the car across from you? I could never figure that out when I was in Puerto Vallarta.
There are some markets where this technology absolutely makes sense. But in the major markets, guess what?
We expect the police to provide that safety framework as a public benefit. Yeah, I know you're saying, Mark, have you driven in Boston or New York? And I have. But part of the safety model is infrastructure. Street signs, street lights, and public safety enforcement. And established markets have those.
I don't see how this technology is going to be destabilizing to Uber or Lyft. Does it have broad market appeal? I don't think so.
Our safety infrastructure consists of getting too many tickets, you lose your license, and your insurance goes up. Bad drivers are weeded out of the system by the public and private infrastructures and institutions.
But what would be disruptive, if you can give me some more details about the identity of the driver prior to pickup. Now, that's disruptive.
And the Boston-based startup Safer, which originally launched as a women's-only ride-sharing service, has made this part of their value proposition.
Can the giants implement this quickly? Absolutely. You have some self-reporting already taking place on both platforms when you rate the driver after they drop you off.
So some of that's already baked in.
So what's the next step for this company? Now, like I said, I think they can play a niche strategy and build up a viable business by avoiding the giants.
Check out chapter 3 of my book, Gorillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths. That chapter is entitled The Art of Gorillapreneur Market Fighting. And there's a great framework in there where I help small businesses learn when to deceive, when to be docile, when to dominate, and when to disrupt, my 4 D's for market fighting. Check that out. Chapter 3 of Gorillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for David's wanting to defeat Goliath.
Sometimes you got to lead a giant alone. If you don't have disruptive capability that gives you the opportunity to price or serve at a level that's greater than the corporate giant, this is one of those times. Leave the giant alone and seek out niche markets.
Sorry, Carmine, but with that strategy, you're not going global.
What's fourth in Gorillapreneur news? Ever heard of EC Rent? EC Rent is trying to be the Walmart
of the gig economy.
What do I mean? Well, these guys, they have a platform that serves 180 countries, and they have a range of sharing services and markets that they serve off a single platform. If you want to rent something, you want to buy something, you want to use something, they have different categories that they serve. And so they want to be kind of the gig economy's supermarket, where they want you to come and do one-stop shopping all on their platform. EC, the letter EC Rents. So EC Rents. I like it. Like the concept. I just think it's difficult for a non-established brand to compete against titans, not one, but three or four. So I went onto their platform and I saw that I could rent a Lamborghini for, you know, $3,500 a day. I was like, wow, well, why not, right? But I can do that on other platforms and with brands that I know and trust and that I've had that have had more market exposure. I could rent a tux. I could rent a bike. I could rent a fishing pole. So you have a lot of different individual brands in the market that are specializing in each of these different verticalized areas. EC Rent's trying to put all of that on one platform. So let's talk about it. Is this disruptive? It's yes and no. If they had $1 billion in their marketing budget and they could convince consumers that they were missing the boat because they didn't have a one-stop shop opportunity when they went to look for their gig services, I would say yes. I don't think the consumer's there yet. The consumer's not at the point in the gig economy the way they were in retail when Walmart established
a one-stop shop
for groceries and dry and wet goods and everything else under one roof.
Now remember, Walmart's value proposition was everyday low pricing on top of convenience. EC Rent's value proposition is not everyday low pricing on shared services. So why would I go to their platform versus going to established brands?
I don't think they're there yet. I don't think their brand says that yet enough for consumers to know to look for it when they need those services. Now,
let's do a sidebar, counselor.
I would recommend this strategy for Walmart or Sam's. I would recommend that they purchase eBay and execute this kind of strategy off their platform. Stop trying to sell so much of what you have in Sam's and figure out how to rent it, how to share it, and disrupt the market that you're in. That's the best way to start taking on an Amazon.
Okay, enough of helping Sam's and eBay make money. Let's get back to our framework.
Is there broad market appeal? Yes and no. Yes, vertically, when I want a car, or I think Zipcar before I think EC Rents. They got to realize that brands are key and they're fighting against titans in many different verticals, and it's going to be hard to establish that one-stop shop. Can the giants implement this? Yes. You're starting to see some of this in China in certain spaces where they're figuring out that going horizontal on the value chain is helping to stabilize the gig market that they're trying to serve. But what EC Rent is built is really a supermarket. And I'm not sold that the consumer's ready
to switch from established brands.
Can they scale this up quickly? Sure. I mean, they got people on the platform now who want to rent out their goods and services. The question is,
can you get economies of scale and infrastructure in place in time to make this profitable?
So what is the next step? What would I do if I were the CEO of EC Rents?
I'd turn this into the Trivago of the sharing and gig economy. Basically, I get all the players, the dominant players, to let me book onto their platform and post prices side by side, just like Trivago does for all their services. So Airbnb, Uber, Lyft, all of these guys would post their prices and I'd manage some of the bookings. And because I have a consolidated one-stop shop platform with their brands, consumers would want to shop with me. Particularly if I can get some volume discounts negotiated in my contract. That's how I'd pursue it. EC Rents, I'm afraid your strategy is not going global.
What's fifth in Gorillapreneur news?
There's a new competitor in the communal kitchen space that competes with Chinese startup Home Cook.
And it's called You Gotta Eat.
Well, you do. You gotta eat.
You Gotta Eat lets you create a social network to conveniently share your home-cooked meals with your network. They call it a personal chef in your pocket. You guys remember me talking about HomeCook in a previous episode, right? They help individuals market their home-cooked meals to people within their social network.
Using the HomeCook app,
they can schedule a time to come by and pick it up, or they can even have a time when it can be delivered.
And then you have other players in the Chinese market, like Hao Choshi. They let users hire nearby chefs and cooks to come to their home and make a meal in the user's kitchen. Cool business models.
You Gotta Eat wants to replicate this business model in Cleveland. The CEO, Tanya Winslow, is a chef and a restaurateur. She launched this business thinking that a communal kitchen would be the best way to drive more traffic to her restaurant. Let's thoroughly examine this business model using the Gorillapreneur frameworks.
Is this disruptive? I don't know. I think this formalizes what people have been doing for years, particularly in the Black community. I know growing up, there were several people, including my grandmother,
and a fraternity brother's grandmother who lived in Carrollton, Georgia, who would
make plates and sell them on Fridays and Saturdays to raise money. She would make desserts and sell red velvet cake by the slice or by the cake. She made a mean pecan pie. I'd be in her living room and people would knock on the door and the kid would have a 50 cent or a dollar and say, I want a slice of pecan pie. And she'd cut it and give it to them and they'd run out the door. So this formalizes what has been happening in many communities already. The question is, does it help you get around the regulatory concerns? And I think when you put pressure on some of the chain restaurants with a platform like this, you're going to get that regulatory pushback. And so I am concerned that this solution may not have the kind of momentum to overrun regulations that, say, a Uber or a Lyft had in markets where taxi cabs were the only ones really capable of providing the kind of shared rides experience. Uber and Lyft just blew into those markets because the demand was so strong that many civic leaders were not willing to stand in front of it and shut those businesses down.
Does You Gotta Eat have broad market appeal?
I say it's a niche market. Why? For the same reasons that I thought Carmine, the ride sharing service, was a niche market. At the end of the day, people buy brands. If you're a mom and pop and you've been in business for 15 years and you serve good food, you become a brand. You become a staple. In my hometown of Selma, everybody that comes through makes a stop at Laney's Barbecue. David Letterman was just there a month or so ago filming for his Netflix special. And of course, he made a stop at Laney's before he left town. Brands are built on people who provide consistent value over time.
There are lots of purveyors of barbecue on the side of the road in Selma. But when people want consistent quality and taste, they go back to Laney's. So unless You Gotta Eat,
find a way to quickly grade and showcase people who have products, be they wings, burgers, pizzas, whatever it is, to have the best in those categories on your platform,
people are going to return back to the brands that they've always known and loved.
Can this scale? Uber and Lyft, their biggest issue was trying to get drivers early on, trying to get enough people who were trained and that could pass the background checks to support
ride sharing.
So imagine trying to staff up enough people who could pass regulatory muster and provide home cooked meals. That's going to be difficult if they don't have access to a shared kitchen where they can provide almost like catering services out of their home. And then who's going to monitor that? Who's going to evaluate that to get the regulatory guys satisfied with this business model operating in some of your biggest and unique cities like New York
and San Francisco?
So what would be my next step if I were the CEO of this business? I think biggest opportunity is figuring out how to use this to change chain restaurants. How do you get people to basically crowdsource menus that they want from the restaurants that they already attend? And if you can figure out a way to do that, basically become the meetup of the restaurant space, then I think you have an opportunity to really create unique dining experiences and some terrific value for yourself. If I can order, like I did when I was staying at the Marriott many years ago, I was on a project, I had to stay in Marriott for almost 3 or 4 months straight without checking out. So I got to a point where I was calling down to the kitchen and just asking for stuff that wasn't on the menu. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, peanut butter and banana sandwiches, all kind of unique stuff. But because they knew me by that point, they gave me the ability to order some things that, you know, kept me happy. What if you could do that, but on a crowdsourced basis at some of your local restaurants? I think that might have some legs to it.
You Gotta Eat? I'm afraid this strategy is not ready to go global.
but we'll see. What's next
in Gorillapreneur news?
Finally, we're going to talk a little bit about Bitcoin. Yes, Bitcoin might be the answer for providing energy in Africa.
Now, as we know, blockchain is an infrastructure that lets us store information like contracts on a P2P basis or peer-to-peer basis with a hash key that keeps all of the nodes in sync so that you can trade and maintain documentation across a growing network.
Sun Exchange is using blockchain-based cryptocurrencies to invest in solar panels in sunny but economically impoverished parts of Africa. Now, how does their business model work?
Sun Exchange crowd sells solar panels to create a solar energy cooperative. And then they enable investors to purchase individual solar cells. They take the entire panel and they turn around and lease them to schools and businesses over a 20-year life. Investors are paid for every megawatt generated, and they can expect a return of approximately 10.3% annually. You get paid in the local currency or in Bitcoin. This is a great way to generate passive income while investing in developing countries where these types of projects to generate this level of power would not have seemed feasible in the past. Great business model. But is it disruptive? Yes, completely disruptive, because these markets were niche markets that were basically underserved, just like the markets Walmart went after when they first launched their business. Small rural communities that were underserved because businesses didn't expect that they could make a profit. Can the giants, though, get in and play in this same arena? Absolutely. That's where this gets scary. Some of the major banks in the world are targeting the development of their own proprietary blockchain infrastructure by 2020. UBS, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America all have pilot programs running today, and they've all filed unique patents around the blockchain technology that they expect to use and launch by 2020. So they want to get in on projects like this by launching their own blockchain infrastructure and using crowd sell approaches to finance major projects. So they could possibly squeeze out players like Sun Exchange and take over projects like this, because they're not going to miss out on this financing opportunity and the opportunity to get not only revenue from running the projects, but also managing the exchange. Can Sun Exchange scale? That's where it gets tough again, because it all depends on a ton of factors. Will the local players pay for the electricity? If you have disruptions in the economy, then businesses and possibly even schools may not be able to make those payments for those megawatts. Then you got to have enough qualified installers. If the installers don't put the panels in to the standard specified in their prospective documents, then you may have higher cost in the out years, and that means lower profits to you on an annual basis. Certainly there's high risk, because Sun Exchange does not have a public exchange where you can trade your contracts, which means if you have to sell in a hurry, you may end up taking a major loss on your investment. And then there's no way to trade that easily when you do have appreciation on the upside. So there's a lot of factors limiting the scalability of this business, and that may not happen until your major players come in and create major markets for these types of investments. So this is a terrific way to get projects off the ground for the developing world. It's going to be interesting to see how they take on the Goliath, who are targeting the next 3 years getting into this world and financing the projects in the same exact way. Am I going to invest in Sun Exchange? Yes, and not just for the passive income. I want to see infrastructure like this built in Africa. Do I think they can win? Maybe. It's going to boil down to liquidity, and can they manage local country risk, including regulatory risk? I love the business model, but the business model puts them in the crosshairs of the giants in a market that is wide open and has explosive growth potential. And as a niche player and as a gorillapreneur, those are usually markets where I advise companies to hit and run. Build a sustainable business and then partner or sell to the giant and get out, because they will use every weapon at their disposal if the market becomes hot enough to eliminate you as a competitor through patents, through government pressure, through regulatory pressure. All of those become tools that the giants will use to completely decimate the competitive landscape. And this feels like one of those markets. But I do love it, and I am going to invest in it.
What's next in Gorillapreneur News? you got some real competition now heating up in the ride-hailing war in China. Not over cars, but over motorbikes. Yes, you got new companies now that are emerging in Southeast Asia.
The first one is
Gojek, a $3 billion Indonesian startup
that combines the Uber, ZenFast, and Deliveroo business models all into one concept.
Gojek allow you to summon a car or a motorbike where you can drive and you can also bring someone takeout, or you can do shopping for someone's groceries, or you can deliver a present to someone across town and make money, spend money, all in the same transaction. That's cool. Now, like I said earlier,
the big players are already experimenting with this sort of business model.
Uber and Lyft are teaming up with Ford and GM and trying to find financing options
for people who don't have cars so that they can get a car and become an Uber driver.
That's a baby step compared to what these guys at Gojek have done.
If you participate in these transactions that Gojek has set up,
where you can build up all of these credits that then you can turn around and use their same platform to pay your bills, like your water bill or your gas bill or your electric bill.
Gojek has a second app.
It's called Go Life, where you can hail someone to cut your hair or give you a massage or clean your bathroom or change your oil in your car. And the money you get on this Gojek digital wallet, as I mentioned, can go to pay a whole lot of different bills, or you can, you know, buy movie tickets. So they have created
a gig economy ecosystem compared to EC Rent's gig supermarket.
That money is changing hands three or four different times in these transactions and ends up in your digital wallet that you can then turn around and pay in users. I like this. The stickiness of this business model and the opportunities created for the people who start their transactions with Gojek are phenomenal. Now, let's talk about it. Let's put the Gorillapreneur gloves on. Is this disruptive? Yes. They have a fully utilized platform. I get a car and immediately I have a job. Once I have a job, I have a wallet that I can use to
pay my bills.
Does it have broad market appeal? Absolutely. By 2025, I suspect the 50% of people who are operating in the gig economy will be operating this way, because most millennials already have two or three different types of gig opportunities, where they drive for Uber and then jump out and they do delivery. And then they jump out of that and then they do some home services, be it repair or other. So the millennials are already accustomed to this sort of market. Their problem is
making sure they get paid and making sure they coordinate the services where they can maximize their utility.
These guys have solved that, and there's some logic to the stuff that they're providing. Can the giants implement this? No, not easily. I can't see Uber implementing everything that they're doing right now. Now, do they have pieces of it? Yes. Uber Eats give Uber drivers the opportunity to deliver when they're not dropping off passengers. But then the next set of capabilities would require creating new services and managing those off their platform. Can it be done? Yes, but not quickly. And if these guys moved into a market where Uber or Lyft operated, I think these guys have the advantage. So disruptive, and the giant is operating, in my opinion, on outdated technology and on an outdated approach. Can they scale? That's going to be the real issue. Can they raise enough funds and put down the infrastructure to move into some of these bigger markets? But they can't wait too long because they have such a good model. You may have copycats that emerge in Asia, particularly in China, that will implement the same model. There's already, like Alibaba,
spinoff,
Ant Financial, that could string together these same kind of services under their umbrella. This is interesting. It's right on the bubble of being something extremely exciting if they can get the cash to push this business model out.
So from a strategy perspective, it's not a bazing, but it's not a womp womp either.
What's next in Gorillapreneur News? We promised to talk about biometrics. And guess who's taking the lead on that?
In the home sharing market.
China. Yes. China, again, is taking the lead, because in China, if you book a hotel room, the hotel is required to confirm your identity before they provide you the room. So they take a photograph or your ID image and they confirm that before you can book a room.
That same statutory requirement applies to the home sharing market. This statutory requirement has limited Airbnb's inroads into the Chinese market because they don't have a low-cost method for confirming your identity before you check into someone's home. There's a Chinese-based startup that thinks they have solved this problem.
Ziyazi, I think I'm pronouncing that right, is partnering with Alibaba's Ant Financial, who has face recognition locks that will be installed on the homes
of people who want to rent out a room.
So These locks provide rapid facial recognition and stores
facial images
upon entry into the home. Now, I know you're sitting there thinking, wow, that's kind of Big Brother-ish. But in China, you're already seeing
mass adoption of biometric applications for retail transactions, even in fast food. Fast food outlets like KFC have installed kiosks where you can use your facial image to order and pay for your food. So China's mass requirement for security, identity confirmation, is forcing the facial biometric image to become the key for the gig economy. Don't think for a minute that China's push into facial recognition is not forcing U.S. companies to jump on board.
JetBlue, they're testing it right now.
They're using facial recognition technology to have agentless passenger boarding, so the technology will recognize your face and clear you to get onto the plane.
Apple, Google, and other tech giants, as you know, are trying to use it as the way to log into your phone. Now, remember, Apple just a few years ago thought the finger was going to be that key biometric to the gig economy. But when China made this emphasis on identity verification using face, it shifted the whole dynamic. And so the next version of the iPhone
uses face as the key to unlock the phone.
I like the fact that we're having this discussion now, because identity data and identity verification for services is going to be the key for the growth of the gig economy. Amazon wants to provide you with a lock and a camera where they can confirm that people opened your door and dropped off a package. In China, they want to load the facial images into the system and verify them prior to them opening the door. If that proves to be a better model, you have companies like Zizu who are now better positioned to fully
exploit the home sharing market. This technology is disruptive. Airbnb does not have this integrated into their U.S. platform, and trying to integrate it will require mass adoption of all the Airbnb hosts. How are you going to get that? Is there going to be some kind of discount or subsidy? Because hosts who have to invest that kind of money in order to be a part of the Airbnb platform, they're going to have to be insured a return on that investment. And Airbnb does not have that baked into their business model. They may be able to compete in China as they roll out, because then they can start from ground zero with a fresh platform and a fresh approach that does not mimic the U.S. platform. But then they have two operating models. So Gorillapreneurs, with this strategy, I think we're going to be at a stalemate. It's going to be difficult for Airbnb to penetrate the Chinese market. It's going to be difficult for Zazu to penetrate the U.S. market because Airbnb dominates there. And the same regulatory requirements for identity verification just don't exist. So if I was Zazu, I would press the advantage in China, where the regulatory environment favors my business strategy, and try to get as much market share as I can get before Airbnb figures things out. But in terms of a strategy, I give Zazu a buzzing. Guys, thank you for listening to this episode of Gorillapreneur News. News about the sharing gig and circular loop economies. If you can't get enough of Gorillapreneur News, sign up for my newsletter at Ciero.com. Ciero.com. Now remember, the podcast hosts monthly giveaways on Amazon, and you can sign up for our sweepstakes just by going to the show notes and clicking on the link. You can also sign up for our monthly sweepstakes to get a signed copy of my book, Gorillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliath, just by signing up for our newsletter at Ciero.com. And guys, remember, we're on Patreon. Just give us your support, and I promise we're going to do something fantastic in 2018. We're going to have a blowout Selma Business pitch contest, and we're going to build those maker spots and those fab labs where people can get together, create and build technology that's going to bring growth to the black belt. Gorillapreneurs, I need your help with one more thing. I have a friend from Selma, Alabama, Michael Johnson, who plays football for the Cincinnati Bengals. He's been nominated to be the Man of the Year, the Walter Payton Man of the Year. You can help him win that award by going to Twitter and tweeting hashtag WPMOY Challenge Johnson, all one word, and tweet that and retweet that every day until January 7th. Every time you do that, he gets a vote, and there's no restriction on how many times you can tweet that. Let's make him Man of the Year. Gorillapreneurs, Scott Sullivan said it best in episode 7. Be a mace. Sharpen those spikes, and remember, if you're not breaking something, your company might be the next thing that gets broken.
Thank you for listening to the Gorillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, you may also enjoy the book Guerrillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. Follow Mark Peterson on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Guerrillapreneur. Now I want to close with a quote from the great Chinese military strategist Sun Tzu. Victorious warriors win first and then go to war, while defeated warriors go to war first, then seek to win. Keep fighting, guerrillapreneurs.